Proposal allows listeners to block any bylaws amendment that would strip them of their voting rights. But Carol and Dave Fertig, both of you, listeners have no power in your proposals, as far as I can read it, to initiate amendments to the bylaws or to vote on amendments to the bylaws in any other situation, again, in either one of your proposals. Why did each of you structure your proposals so that listener members don't have those powers to initiate or vote on bylaws amendments, either through petition or referendum? Carol, why don't you go first?
Well, what I did, Raphael, was apply the law. The law says that if you're a member of a nonprofit corporation, you have the right to vote on any bylaws amendments that materially affect your rights. I am concerned, and I have to say that I don't believe that an organization with somewhere between 25 and 100,000 members should be run by the members. I think the members should elect good representatives. They should watchdog them. They should join committees of the local boards and work on proposals that they ask their local board to consider and put forward for bylaws amendments. But I don't think that the referendum process is a very good way to run an organization like this. There are too many legal considerations. There are too many fiduciary obligations of boards and so forth. So I think that the local, the listener members should very carefully monitor their local boards, those who are interested in governance. And I think local boards should form governance committees and take suggestions and work on them and really study them carefully and shop them around the network. If things are not working well, we ought to amend the bylaws to deal with it. But most of the issues that really concern listeners are not governing issues. They are programming issues, not really bylaws issues. So, you know, if you have a locally elected local board, you can hold those people very accountable to what's coming out over the air by removing them from office and electing other people that you think will do a better job. There's one other thing I did want to say, and I'm sorry it's a little off topic, but I think the local boards need to have significant staff representation on them. That if we're really going to affect programming, if we're going to affect how things are done, we need listeners who are elected and staff members who are elected to these local committees or boards. And I think we really need a third of the local board to be staff members in dialogue with community members to solve our problems. One staff member is certainly not enough. There's no staff anywhere in any of the five stations that can fully represent the very diverse interests of the staff inside the stations, paid and unpaid and of different opinions about how things are going. So,
well, Carol,
in my proposal, a third of the local board is elected by the staff.
We'll return to that question. Actually, I have something formulated for both of you that looks at the percentages of staff that both of you suggest and what some of the political and structural implications of that are. But let's put that on hold for just a moment.
Sure.
And ask Dave Fertig to explain for us your proposal with respect to initiating bylaws amendments on the part of listeners and voting on bylaws amendments.
Well, I think Carol makes some very important points. I mean, numerosity. I mean, we have got, I think, in the neighborhood of 100,000 subscribers, sponsors, what have you. At least, you know, we have about 15,000 in L.A. and or Southern California, and I don't know, Carol, what about 20 or 30,000 in
25,000.
I mean, it's enormous. And I do feel that, I mean, look, if the listeners, the active sponsors, are electing local board members, and if certainly in the what is called my proposal or the C, there's A, B, and C, the C proposal, there is absolute accountability in the sense that if the listeners are not satisfied, they can certainly jerk the leash right back on that local board or the local advisory board or the station committee members, whomever, if they feel they're not being sufficiently responsive. And I think that Carol's correct. We need to have representatives held closely accountable, but, you know, let's not tie their hands. Let's put a leash on them in all directions, upward, downward, sideways. But let's let their hands free to do their job. And if they're not being responsive, then you jerk on the leash.
This is a question for all three of you. The KPFK Bylaws Subcommittee voted unanimously to declare that any bylaws proposal that doesn't include listener-elected program councils would be unacceptable. Carol Spooner's proposal provides some checks and balances on programming direction through a national programming committee. It also gives powers over programming to local station boards. However, none of the proposals mention program councils at the station level. Isn't programming policy at the heart of Pacifica's governance? And is it possible to have real democracy at Pacifica without the democratic control of programming policy through program councils at the local level? Dave Fertig, as chair of the KPFK Bylaws Committee, let's start with you, then we'll go to Carol and Dave Adelson.
Well, actually, I'm not sure. There were a few local bylaw meetings which I was unable to attend for various reasons out of the 16
or so. The commission is correct.
But in any event, I was at some where those votes were taken, and it was not unanimous, and some were, perhaps. So, you know, I wouldn't argue the point. I just want to point out that at the core of Pacifica is the community, the communities which we're to serve. And I think that the decision about programming councils, whether you have the programming with, you know, program, you elect people to a programming council is one model I've heard. And then these people who may or may not have, you know, experience or expertise in programming then have veto power in some instances over programming. That's one end of the spectrum, I guess. Or the other end of the spectrum where there's no programming council and there's a programming director who puts her or his imprint on the style of the programming. Obviously, there needs to be a middle road, but I think that that has to be decided locally. Again, my model is not trying to put a fully developed plan and impose it on everybody and say, here, learn how to play this instrument that's never been played before. Instead, it says, look, let's develop an environment in which this experiment may proceed. And I, with five different signal areas, and maybe more in the future, every community is rather different. If you look at the numbers in D.C. or Southern California, hugely different. In many respects. So I think that to do a one-size-fits-all is not appropriate.
Carol?
Well, I agree with Dave. I do not believe we should have elected program councils. First of all, that creates two competing boards, and nobody would know who to hold accountable if programming went astray at the station. Do you recall the local governing board or the board of directors or the programming council? How do you hold people accountable under that system? The other thing I feel is I tend to agree with Dave. I think each station area has different needs and a different community to serve, and they're in different stages of restoring Pacifica to its mission, and that each station is going to need to experiment with how best to make programming decisions. I don't think anybody knows how to do that right now. We have a program council at KPFA that has some members appointed by our locally elected advisory board on it and some community members, and they're struggling. They're really struggling hard with divisive and deep philosophical issues about programming. And I'd like to give them a chance to keep working on it. And I just don't know. I don't think an elected board is the way to do it. I think that there are many issues of quality. There are many issues of serving the mission and how to evaluate programming. There are issues of people's jobs on the line. When you want to put a new program on, you take somebody off. There are issues of balance between public affairs and music and news. And those things, I don't think they should just, I think they should be, each station should be looking at those issues and trying to come to a local, experiment with how to make those decisions locally. I don't think we should lock it into the bylaws for sure, because whatever we lock into the bylaws, we can't change.
Well, I mean, we do have mechanisms for changing the bylaws, and, of course, if elected station board members were also on the program council, there'd only need to be one election. My question, and I don't know that either of you quite caught it, maybe Dave Adelson, you can focus on this a bit more, is how do we provide for accountability for the Pacifica mission? How do we both safeguard the network's mission and make sure that the control of governance, which in my view centers around the control of programming policy, how do we make sure that's democratic, that there are checks and balances from both above and below, that local concerns are represented, in the absence of a program council or with a program council. I don't know what your perspective is, David.
Well, I'm not really sure the best way to deal with it, to be quite honest. I mean, I think let's look at the way it is now. The way it is now is it's determined basically by who gets chosen as the manager. The manager is finally responsible for selecting the program director and also for what structures there'll be in the station. We haven't had a lot of recent experience, at least at this station, with the program council. There used to be a program council or committee that would discuss what was going on the air, but ultimately when the decision was made to move the programming in a different way, the program director claimed that that council or committee was not actually serving her needs, and I think it's because she had a different mandate than they imagined they had. I have no objection to the idea of an elected program council. I think that it's my experience from being on the board is to ask the board to be a programming council or committee itself or have its own members do that in addition to all the other things they have to do can begin to be a problem. I wouldn't have a problem with either an elected board selecting members of a program council or of them being elected. And I don't know whether or not that needs to be put in the bylaws. But some of these issues really do need to get discussed at greater length before I think we put them in bylaws. But I just want to go back and address one thing. I'm a member of a couple of different scientific societies, the Society for Neuroscience and the American Physiological Society, with tens of thousands of members in each. And all the members vote on bylaws changes. I don't have any problem with the idea that members should vote on bylaws changes. In the event that they're small technical things, most people won't care very much. But when it's a really central issue, it's going to matter. And this issue of the way interests tend to separate from each other when you get this establishment of rank is an important thing. But I don't think I really have a satisfactory answer for your question on program council. I very much understand that that's where the rubber meets the road, and that to put at such a distance the control of that, where you have to get a board that then instructs an executive that then hires another executive that then implements, you're a very far distance away. At the same time, you also want to establish, given the kind of programming we're supposed to be doing, the kind of programming that is directed towards actually changing the world, making it more just, less inegalitarian, and fighting abuse of authority, you really have to put the listenership in a position of defending that. But you also have to create some buffering against people who are doing the unexpected, who are doing, very often people who come up with new ideas who are at the cutting edge of dissent may not have support even from our own listenership. And you've dealt with issues, you're very concerned with issues of race and white primacy or white supremacy, things like that. Even among progressive listeners to this station, there are some differences of opinion. When somebody's coming on with something that really challenges our own held beliefs, you do want to establish a level of protection to give them the space to really articulate and get through these ideas before there's a sort of instant retaliation by large majorities that may be uncomfortable with what they're hearing.
Okay. Thank you very much, David. This is KPFK Los Angeles 90.7 FM. For those of you who are just tuning in, you're listening to KPFK Matters, an exploration of the structural changes being undertaken at the Pacifica Network. Tune in next week at this time to hear the regularly scheduled programs. We'll be taking your phone calls in about 15 minutes. Dave, I'm going to turn to you again, Dave Adelson. Both the Spooner and Furtick proposals, if you will, proposals A and C, give lots of representation to the station staff on the station boards and on the national boards. There is obviously a legitimate concern on the part of the staffs to have workplace democracy, to flatten out hierarchies, to share decision-making on a day-to-day basis with management. But there's also a lot of people who feel that staff and programmers would have a conflict of interest if they were empowered to make policy about programming, because they'd be asked to make policy that would affect their own programs or programming produced by friends and colleagues. In other words, staff has a legitimate interest, it seems to me, in labor management relations and workplace democracy. But doesn't the staff have a conflict of interest when it comes to governance as it pertains to programming decisions in particular?
Well, first of all, if you're saying that the governing boards are themselves going to be responsible for specific programming decisions, it may de facto be the case that if you have certain staff members sitting on a governing board that or a board with the powers, for example, to remove a manager, you may get some de facto influence on that. But the whole idea that there are conflicts of interest everywhere, I remember thinking that the prior national board had identified essentially every group that was responsible for the growth and functioning of Pacifica as a threat to its future growth and prospering. And you have to look
at... That could be.
When you look at Pacifica, and people talk about wanting a governing board that can lead us forward, well, the growth of Pacifica, and it grew from a small station into essentially the largest independent, non-state, non-corporate controlled broadcast outlet in the country, if not the world, all of that came through gifts. All of that came through people's gifts of time, people's gifts of money, and people's gifts of stations in the case of WBAI. So it was that vast expansion was the result of the people on the ground doing the work and then those people who were supporting it. I don't really see that conflict of interest as being this crucial matter. I mean, I know that there were some arguments before that what had happened to the programming was it had become static and self-referential because people were only acting on behalf of their program or the programs that other people wanted. I think what programmers want more than authority over the whole thing, my experience is that they want to be given the freedom to do the work they came to do. It's going to be inevitable that if you have staff representation on boards, yes, they'll be looking out for their own interest. But if the if it's not the case that they're, I'm sorry, let me back up. I'm not overly concerned about that issue. Some amount of it will definitely occur. If the boards are open, if there's a level of transparency, I think it will restrain the ability of anybody to act in their own interest exclusively to the detriment of the whole. Maybe I'm naive in that way. In fact, I probably am.
Dave Fertig, your proposal gives 27% of the seats on the national board to staff. And Carol, your proposal gives staff 33% of the seats.
One-third, yes.
Yes. Do you feel that given the interests of staff members in conserving their jobs and conserving their programs, that there is a likelihood that the overall political direction of the board might tend to be more conservative if there's a high level of staff representation? Dave Fertig, you first.
Lou Hill started from the premise. Lou Hill, he's renowned to be the founder of Pacifica, but of course many others were with him in that. But in one of the writings that he set forth some of his philosophical views that the person on the mic, we're not talking about me, but I mean the person that's regularly a programmer at Pacifica, be able to speak from their heart and say what they want and say what they feel is right and do their art. I think it's an important thing to recognize that the people that do the work should have influence on the manner by which their work is to be done and how it's controlled. And I think that while we must maintain accountability with the communities, some of which are underserved and need to be served better, we need to enhance that. But I think one of the communities we need to make sure are also served are those, you would say, artists, perhaps, the people that work in the station and make it work. I don't think we can discount that. And I feel that to say that it's a conflict of interest, I don't think so. I mean, as Dave Adelson said, if it's done with an accountability, then we can pull them out of it, push them, whatever, hold them accountable. And I'm not jealous of power. I think we should distribute it. And I think that the staff deserve a strong voice. In my model, one of the four station committee members is staff. But again, how that develops in terms of a local station board, in terms of numerosity and staff involvement, that needs to be determined by those who are elected finally.
Carol Spooner.
Well, I agree with Dave. I believe that the staff have a vital stake in preserving the mission of Pacifica. I think they are, in fact, the staunchest defenders of free speech that we have and will jealously defend bureaucratic attempts to censor what goes out on the air. I think that that's one thing that most, if not all, staff members share. Another thing I think is very important is I don't think one member elected by the staff can actually represent the diverse views of the staff, which are always in flux. So that's why I say one-third. I think that the listeners need to hear from the staff, and the staff need to hear from the listeners, and they need to sit on a deliberative body together and negotiate and talk things out. I think the programming councils also, to the extent that we have them, should be a mix, you know, mix it up, get different views in there, and work it out. If we can't work it out amongst ourselves, then there's really not much hope for the world. And another thing, too, well, I'll come back to that point because I just lost it.
Well, if I could just say, I agree that one staff member is not enough on a local station board ultimately. Again, it's a threshold. We need to start off with four people. That's not enough. I grant that. I think one staff member is not able to represent the diverse perspectives of the staff and their various functions and relationships with the station. So I agree, but I think, again, it's a matter of, do we develop it now or do we allow it to develop?
I just remembered my point, Raphael.
Okay, please go ahead, Carol, certainly.
If the staff are not in on the decision-making bodies, then what happens is decisions are imposed on them. Mm-hmm. That sets up resistance. That doesn't set up collaboration and cooperation. It sets up resistance. I think it's a model excluding the staff from having a strong and significant and important voice in the decision and policy-making bodies is a prescription for dysfunction.
Carol, isn't there a difference between democracy in the workplace and the power of programmers to set policy over programming, for example,
or
the managers of the stations?
I think when the hijacking of Pacifica began in the early 90s, what happened first, the staffs were kicked off all the boards. The bylaws were changed in 1991 to get them off. I think that's very, very, very telling. Most of the staff members who smelled something fishy going on and started to speak out about it were fired. If the staff is involved in the policy-making bodies, I think that's a very strong protection against that happening again.
Okay. One of the most important aspects of creating an accountable system that protects the Pacifica mission is the power to recall officials who may be seriously taking Pacifica off track, as we've seen happen in the last few years, and as Carol is just referring to. Without recall powers, in effect, we'd have to resort to the kind of lawsuits that have been filed over the course of the last couple of years during another crisis. Dave Fertig, your proposal makes it, in my view, difficult for listeners to recall a board member. It would require hundreds of signatures or 5% of all listener sponsors to petition for recall. 15% would have to vote in total, which is a number that is significantly higher than the average turnout for most board elections for nonprofits. Two-thirds of all those voting would have to vote in favor of recalling the official for the measure to take effect. Isn't it too difficult in your plan for listeners to recall a board member?
Well, let me clarify. Not all three of those need to be done. The 5% threshold, whatever the number might end up being, whether it's deemed to be proper to have it to be 2% or 3% or 8%, but for purpose of discussion, I promoted 5% because it struck me that in Southern California, that would be about 700 people, assuming every paid sponsor becomes a voter, which is another issue. And hopefully we'll have greater numbers of paid sponsors. So that number could be indeed very, very difficult to achieve. And it should be an accessible number, but it should not be one that someone could just go out on a weekend and say, oh, let's get a few people together, 20 or 30 or 50 people together and get some signatures. Because then we'd be in constant upheaval about the bylaw and recall review. The issue of how many voters it takes to implement a recall is an important issue and needs to be thought of. Again, the numbers are very different in every signal area. So I think a percentage might not work because a percentage here may have a very different impact than a percentage in D.C. or Houston. As to the boards, of course, a two-thirds recall, that's relatively standard. There needs to be something more than just a power play of 51% to effectuate such a dramatic thing as recalling a member. As to the elections, as I recall, I think that the election turnout in the Bay Area, Carol, correct me if I'm wrong, was somewhere between 10 and 15%.
It was 20% the first election and about 18 the second.
Oh, okay. So that's pretty high. Well, so I wanted to make sure that it was a threshold that was substantial but not too darn difficult to obtain. And in talking with Lydia Brazon, who's expert in election matters throughout the world in different environments and so forth, She was very helpful in helping me to consider, you know, the percentage. And again, it's a matter of discussion. My proposal is not something an argument to be won. It's some ideas to discuss. And I think that whether it's 15%, 10%, 20%, the question, Raphael, is not, is it easy or is it too difficult? Or maybe it is that. Is it attainable and is it practical? The issue of having the recall power itself is really the vital thing. And I think that with that, we can proceed.
Dave Adelson wanted to follow up, and then Carol, I'm going to turn to you with a similar question.
Yeah, I think in Proposal C, in Dave Furtick's proposal, the thresholds for doing that are really unmanageably high, and I don't think Dave's averse to, as he said, discussing them. But I think that the percentage of people you'd have to get on any petition should be referenced to the number who vote, not the total potential voters. So if 15% are voting and you have a 5% threshold, then a third of all voters would have to sign it. I also think you could deal with it, for example, if a group was interested in recalling a particular member because they were concerned. And by the way, very often it happens that only limited numbers of people are paying close attention to what goes on at the level of governance. You might have something like requiring 50 signatures in order to give them airtime at some point to announce that they were developing a recall petition for the following reasons, and that if people were willing to sign, they could, so that they could make contact with the larger listenership. There are other ways to do it, but I do think that the thresholds do need to be lowered so it's an effective check.
You're listening to KPFK Los Angeles. We're going to be taking your phone calls in just a moment. The phone lines are open. The call-in number is 818-985-5735. That's 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. Callers will be free to make a comment or ask a question. Please try to keep it brief, and panelists will be happy to respond to your remarks, and you'll be given a chance to respond in turn to the panelists. Like to remind everyone to keep this as short as possible. Carol, in one minute, can you remark on this notion? Should the airwaves be available to listeners to present matters with respect to recall procedures on the air in order to inform other listeners about what's going on? And shouldn't there be a uniform process for recall articulated in the bylaws?
Yes, I think the air should be made available, and more importantly, I think the subscribers list has to be available. In fact, the law requires it. If you want to bring a recall election, you need to be able to mail your solicitation to all the other members seeking them their support in the recall. I think that the law actually requires that, so I'm not terribly concerned about laying it out in the bylaws. You can look at the law and it tells you. Also, I do think that recall needs to be a meaningful right, which means that the threshold, I believe, for recalling a director should be relatively low. I think it should be the same number of votes it takes to elect a director and not more. I don't think that will destabilize the organization. Recall elections are very, very difficult to win. As Dave pointed out, most people aren't paying close attention. They've got other activist activities that are consuming their lives, activists and families and jobs and so forth. And it takes something pretty egregious to get people to want to recall a director. So I'm not very concerned about destabilizing the organization. But I think the airwaves need to be available. We need to have regular reports to the listener, regular call-ins, regular channels of communication, and yes.
Okay, yeah, what she said.
Thank you so much. You're listening to KPFK Los Angeles 90.7 FM. We're going to be taking your calls as soon as we come back. You're listening to KPFK Matters, and regularly scheduled program will return next week. The call-in number again is 818-985-5735. 818-985-5735. Your calls will be absolutely unscreened as soon as we return.
This is 90.7 FM, KPFK Los Angeles. Radio Nation with Mark Cooper returns next week at this time. KPFK Matters continues. Background briefing with Ian Masters follows at 11.
Would you like to be part of the KPFK family? Full-time positions now available at the station include operations manager, news editor, program director, and webmaster. If this is an offer you just can't refuse, send a cover letter and resume to gm@kpfk.org or fax it to 818-763-7526. You can also mail your information to KPFK 90.7 FM, 3729 Cahuenga Boulevard West, North Hollywood, California, 91604. For full job descriptions on these positions or to apply online, drop by the job opening section of kpfk.org or call 818-985-2711, extension 204. But remember this, if you want to be considered as a contender, the deadline is September 6th, so don't you dare miss this opportunity.
Hi, I'm Roz Larman, and this is an invitation of the folks of Folksing to tune in to the program when it airs this evening from 7 to 10 p.m. to hear Wally in the Wild West. The band delivers traditional and original Western song in an authentic style that embodies the spirit and soul of the West. Every once in a while, the real deal comes along, and Wally indeed is just that. The program is Folksing. The time is this evening from 7 to 10 p.m. Tune in to hear our special guests, the real deal, Wally in the Wild West, right here on Pacifica Radio for Southern California at 90.7 FM, KPFK, Los Angeles.
Well, I'm an old coyote howling all night long.